This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Last November, after about 6 months of negotiations in the U.S. Senate, President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law passed the U.S. Senate and was signed into law. It's formally called the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, but we're going to refer to it today as BIL. It authorized the federal government to spend about $1.2 trillion on infrastructure projects nationwide, and New Mexico is expected to get well over a $3.5 billion slice of that pie. The money will help pay for things like roads and bridges, but also water systems and broadband internet. It could have a very large impact on our large state with many rural communities that generally have trouble paying for big projects like these. Today, we'll dig into infrastructure spending and ARPA, that's the American Rescue Plan Act, and BIL funding, how to prioritize all the projects that have merit on their own when there's competition for funding, and how cities can get more money since a significant portion of these funds depends on successful grant applications. We want to hear from you also. Share your ideas about infrastructure spending, transparency, and how we can ensure that New Mexico gets its fair share of federal funding by emailing us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 505-277-5866. Okay, let's get started. We're going to do something a little different today by starting the show with an interview I recorded yesterday afternoon with Heidi Kribo-Redeker from the Council on Foreign Relations. She's in Washington, D.C., and we talked about ARPA and BIL funding and how states can get their hands on it. Here's that tape from yesterday afternoon. Hi, Heidi. Thank you for joining us for Let's Talk New Mexico. We're happy to have you.
Very happy to be here.
Okay. Well, first, can you just tell us about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, also known as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law? We're calling it BIL. How much money is there and how's it being divided?
This is a huge bipartisan victory. I have to say, I've been working on infrastructure for a very long time. This is like the big federal dose that we've been waiting for. It was passed last November 2021, and it's $1.2 trillion. It includes $550 billion in new infrastructure spending. So this is on top of the infrastructure spending that was already anticipated, but it has an additional $550 billion. And it's a little bit different than the way that we have approached investment in infrastructure in the past.
My understanding is much of that money is kind of allocated to states by formula. And for New Mexico, that's something like $3.5 billion. What about the rest? How do we get our hands on it?
So the formula funding is pretty straightforward. And I'm pretty sure that the state and local officials in New Mexico are quite familiar with how to access this funding and what to do with it. The additional new money, I mean, if you think about it, you have about 380 total federal programs, and of those, 132 are completely new. So for those new programs, they are meant to address different types of gaps in our infrastructure, and that focuses on equity, on resilience, particularly, underserved areas, tribal lands, and a lot of investment in making sure that we have a robust transmission grid. $73 billion is going to the investment in new grid energy so that we can create the path for all of the new types of clean energy like solar and wind and the like. I think when I look at the types of things that are different, I would say definitely the focus on equity, the focus on resilience, both in terms of climate-related resilience and cyber resilience, which is also important.
Now, what's cyber resilience?
Cyber resilience means that, we have had and continue to have threats, both coming from state actors, non-state actors, hopefully not too many inside the U.S., but really targeting the pipeline system or the transportation system or the, or our grids, our utilities. And we want to make sure that some funding is allocated to be able to upgrade that resilience to protect against any malign actors that might be trying to disable any of our critical infrastructure.
Okay, so infrastructure then is really much more broad than water pipes and roads and bridges. And this second pot of funding pays for those sorts of projects, it sounds like. What kinds of other things would that second pot of funding pay for?
I'm very happy that they took a wider definition of infrastructure. So it's just not roads and bridges and ports and what you would think of as traditional infrastructure. It does include that, but it's not as traditional anymore. So that I think they want to make sure that we roll out new technology that addresses challenges that are, for example, crossover. You have the rolling out of EV charging stations, for example. The president announced a program to roll out 500,000 charging stations for electric vehicles across the country. And again, the focus, I think, on equity is particularly important because throughout the different pots of money that are focused on broadband, water, traditional infrastructure, and also new types of infrastructure enablement, you have a focus on equity that runs through all of these programs, which means that for state and local officials looking to access, in particular, some of the competitive funds, it's thinking about how you access those funds a little bit differently. It's a good thing. It means, I think, for New Mexico in particular, there's a strong focus on tribal lands and making sure that tribal lands have access, really, you know, significant access to many of the types of funds available.
Okay, so who can apply for these grants? Are they for the state or counties or cities?
They are primarily, but not exclusively. So there are private components to this as well. For example, I would say, you know, the Department of Energy has a loan guarantee program that is very robust and has loan guarantees to provide cheaper funding to innovative energy projects and investments. So people don't know this, but Tesla got one of its earliest backers from the Department of Energy when it borrowed at the early days of Tesla. There's a program there that looks at innovation in new types of energy, and that money is actually available, and the Department of Energy is very encouraging of private companies or communities to go and apply for those funds.
We're largely rural. We're not particularly well funded. What sort of challenges are we going to face when it comes to getting these federal dollars into our communities?
Well, one of the challenges that I can see is that big cities and states with large urban populations and ones that are very well funded will have the capacity in-house to ramp up very quickly and go after these funds, particularly the competitive ones. And states that don't have the state and local capacity to actually spend time on the application process, I see it as a potential gap in the know-how. How do you actually work with the federal government to access this funding? The first answer is to go through the normal channels through the state. The other is that there are a lot of resources out there now for state and local and private looking to access some of this funding. And I would go to, if you go to build.gov, a lot of those are out there. A lot of what's being done right now on the federal side, not even on the state and local side, but they're just trying to get their ducks in order so that you have they have these new programs. They have to do the regulations around the programs, how they're going to implement them. So it's not just that it's a state and local government challenge, but it's also a federal challenge to work with new programs. There's money that's been allocated for state and local governments that need to have technical assistance in the application for the funds. I would also suggest that there are, a number of private resources. Bloomberg, for example, stood up a program to help under-resourced areas. Under-resourced, I mean, in terms of they don't have department upon department of people writing these project application forms because they are sometimes complicated. So they actually have, they're standing up a program that will work with state and local governments to try and provide, you know, provide resources. And I always suggest reaching out to community colleges and sort of, you know, the people who are good at writing proposals for federal funds, there are a lot of them in academia. So let's put them to work.
I'm thinking of New Mexico as part of, you know, this region of the Southwest where we are surrounded by states that are better funded and have probably stronger bureaucracies than we do. Arizona, Colorado, Texas. I wonder if there's an opportunity for states to work together, or is it strictly competitive?
So there are lots of opportunities to work together. Again, I think the idea, even, you know, if you look at issues that that are challenges for neighboring states, neighboring counties, where you have a potential solution that could include a region as opposed to just something defined by state boundaries, there is definitely the appetite to provide funds for community-based solutions that cross state and local boundaries. For New Mexico, you know, it's a matter of figuring out where there could be the appetite to work together with other states on shared challenges, whether that's water, agriculture, energy, and particularly, you know, there are funds set aside, as I said, for tribal lands. There's a whole playbook for tribal lands on the build.gov website that walks through how you actually, what are the specific programs that are out there? How do you apply for them? And I think that that's one of those hidden, you know, one of those buried treasures in there that a lot of folks don't know about.
Okay, I think the easy opportunity to identify in the Southwest is really just water availability. Give us the big picture take. What's at stake here? Help us understand the big opportunity with this BIL funding and what we could potentially be losing if we don't take advantage of it.
So I see this as a down payment on what's a much larger investment gap. Over the years, we've really underinvested in our infrastructure for a very, very long time. We're creaky, it's old, our bridges are falling apart. You know, we really need to, we desperately need to upgrade our infrastructure. And this is a down payment. The other thing is that it's not a stimulus bill in the way that we've seen other stimulus bills. This is meant to be an investment over time to solve for a deficit. There is pressure to get the money out the door quickly, but it's really to solve a much larger gap. It's a long time in coming. It's $1.2 trillion. That's a big slug. It just needs to get out the door to the right places with the right oversight and to the purpose, I think, that it was meant.
All right, Heidi, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Talk New Mexico. Really appreciate you giving up some time to us today.
It's a pleasure, and thank you so much for inviting me.
That was Heidi Kribo-Redeker from the Council on Foreign Relations. She talked to me yesterday afternoon, and I recorded the conversation to share with you. Now, I'd like to introduce our first live guest this morning, Marty Chavez, the former three-term Albuquerque mayor and state senator, and now the state's infrastructure advisor working with the Department of Finance and Administration. Thanks for joining us this morning, Mr. Chavez.
Well, good morning. It's a beautiful morning.
Yeah, well, it is. First off, how much federal money has New Mexico received from the infrastructure law so far?
Well, two buckets of money. One is ARPA that you alluded to. That was about $1.8 billion that came in, used primarily to backfill the unemployment and some of the more immediate challenges around the pandemic. And then that left about $1.1 billion, which was appropriated by the legislature in December and January, two different sessions, one special called by the governor, and the regular one. The ARPA money is important because they have very few constraints on them relative to the BIL, which you've also referred to. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, BIL, horrible acronym, but be that as it may, $3.8 billion, 60% of which is formula, which means it goes into pre-established channels for expenditure by the different state agencies. And then the other part, which a previous speaker talked about, and that's 40% goes to grants. So a lot of money, about $5 billion total.
Okay, I know we are just getting started, but we have to pause for just a second. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We are taking your calls about the bipartisan infrastructure law and money to help build up New Mexico. Call us at 505-277-5866. We'll be right back.
Support provided by REDW, an Albuquerque-based and locally owned advisory and CPA firm dedicated to serving the needs of New Mexico businesses, government, and individuals since 1953. More information at REDW.com.
Please join us in thanking our business and nonprofit underwriters for their continued financial support. Because of their support, our mission will continue as your trusted source of award-winning local news and music. KUNM, powered by you.
It's always true, and maybe even more so during times of uncertainty, our souls are nourished by experiences of wonder and joy. Join me for some life-affirming music by composer Anthony Ritchie, his Piano Concerto No. 3 on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We are taking state infrastructure. We are talking to State Infrastructure Advisor Marty Chavez. Tell us what your top infrastructure priorities are. Is it water or broadband internet? Call 505-277-5866 or tweet to us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Okay, Marty, what is the process that the state's been using to prioritize projects to spend all these federal dollars we've been talking about this morning?
Well, goodness gracious, that's an easy question, but a very complicated answer. Most of the state agencies, and I'll use here, for example, NMDOT, the Highway Department, also known as, has over years always prioritized road projects, bridge projects. They have safety analyses, and so they've got pretty well established priorities, as do the other agencies. So you put those in, but then there's also this other part about shovel ready, and it has different meanings to different people. But basically, these monies are not intended to start something totally new, except for the couple of new programs that we have yet to know fully about from the feds. If a project is say, let's say it scores a 4 out of 10, that may get priority of one that scores 2 because it's further along in the process. It's that design and the like. The number one concern that I hear around the state, and I know this is true in the governor's office, is water. You know, smaller communities have tremendous water needs. Their systems are antiquated. They've been patchworked over time. And so ideally, we can use this money to have more comprehensive solutions. Beyond that, of course, it's how we get around. In transportation, and then resilience. And in that regard, I'm talking about, you know, how resilient is our natural environment and the built environment that we use these monies for. So a lot of things go into determining the priorities. My job as infrastructure advisor is just that, advice. The governor is she rightfully should be the decider in chief. And ultimately, she makes a decision. But she listens to everybody, not just the agency experts, but she's on the road all the time.
Okay, well, lots of people have good ideas for specific projects. We just got a tweet from Patrick who says, of the many things in infrastructure, we could update the 911 emergency system. It's long overdue. That's not something I know much about. Maybe you do, Marty. But could you tell us about some of the specific projects that are in the works right now?
Well, and 911 would specifically be the city of Albuquerque, and the cities over 50,000 have direct ARPA monies. So they have money to do that if that's what the mayor and the city council decide is important. We're looking, the governor's charge is twofold. One, get the money out the door. It doesn't help New Mexicans if it's sitting in the bank. And then two, do it in a way that is as transformational and big as possible. And we have a number of places around the state. Santa Teresa, the border crossing. Most of the folks listening, if they're on their laptop at all today, probably are using a laptop built by Foxconn just the other side of the border. That's one where with the Build America, Buy America provisions of the BIL, if they want to come into the United States, spell that just our side of the border, it's Santa Teresa, to do the manufacturing. Tremendous economic benefit to the state. If we can provide them the infrastructure, the runways they need for the large aircraft, the rail connections. We do that, and it's a tremendous return on investment. So that's one that's a large one. We've got Green Corridors up in Taos County that are collaborative partnerships of all kinds of stakeholders at the local level. So a lot of things. Now, my portfolio does not include broadband, but certainly we pay attention and that connectivity. And I think this will long-term be one of the most transformational parts of all the BIL spending will be connecting New Mexico. We know in rural New Mexico, you know, kids, we know that if kids aren't connected, they are behind. And so a major component, highly transformational of the spending is going to be to connect New Mexico.
Okay. We got an email from Samuel who says that New Mexico should invest in renewing and electrifying transit, investing in bike and pedestrian access and safety. That Albuquerque in particular is a dangerous place to be a pedestrian, encouraging us to take advantage of all of this one-time funding. Marty, I'm wondering, what has the state identified as the top priorities right now?
Well, there are so many. And understand that for all these billions of dollars, they will not be adequate to our need. We have greater need than this money, but it's more money than we've ever had before. And so we really want to be as thoughtful and smart as possible as to how we spend it. Certainly, electrification is a high priority for the governor. I was with her last week in Taos, week before last, when she cut the ribbon on what they're doing up there with the Kit Carson Co-op. Taos County is now all solar daytime, which is solar arrays. So nothing else, totally renewable energy. This is dramatic. Right now, you can drive east to west across New Mexico fairly well in an electric vehicle, not so much north to south. You don't have to stop overnight to charge at a motel. And so you will see over the next months, we'll be rolling out a series of EV chargers, electric vehicle chargers, to help electrify New Mexico. And then beyond that, working on grid resilience and renewables throughout New Mexico. So these are very high priorities. They're very important. We've not done historically a good job. The previous guest talked about equity. This is a major component of the BIL and one that we welcome. And two, it's really hard to figure out sometimes.
Okay, I think this is a good time to introduce our next guest. In the studio with me this morning, I have Terry Brunner with Pivotal New Mexico, a group that helped create the report New Mexico Rural Infrastructure Needs in 2021. Pivotal's mission is to help organizations get the funding for charitable and social causes. Thanks for coming on the show this morning, Terry.
Thanks for having me.
Terry, I'd like to ask you, did you identify kind of these same priorities we've been talking about this morning when looking at New Mexico's greatest needs? What areas of infrastructure did you find were in most of need and of investing in?
Well, we were specifically tasked by the legislature to look at broadband, electric, water, and wastewater. And so those were the areas of focus that we checked out. And, you know, I think to go off of what the mayor said, broadband certainly, water issues are huge, and wastewater issues as well.
Okay, I'll go ahead and mention to listeners, we're going to get a link to your report up on our website so they can have a look themselves. That'll be at KUNM.org, and we'll get to that right after the show. I want to go back to Marty. The thing about building is that it takes time, but we all want to see the benefits of our investments right away. I'm wondering what kind of timelines we're looking at for some of the higher profile projects, the things that are already underway.
I think it's an intergenerational process. We all want it now. We want it for free, and that's the end of the story. It's a lot more complicated than that. Getting money out the door is easy to say and very hard to do. There are contract processes. Certainly, transparency is essential with this volume of dollars. And it leads us to a real challenge we have, not just in New Mexico, but in every state of the union. In an essentially full employment economy, where do you find the labor? And we all know this living here in Albuquerque. You see the help wanted signs everywhere. Restaurants can't stay open for the full 7 days because they can't find the help. It's the same thing in building, whether you're looking for contractors, electricians, plumbers. It is a challenge to find the labor to get the work done. Having said that, it is happening. You will see particularly ARPA monies are already hitting the streets. the BIL monies, I think it'll probably take another 4 or 5 months before you start to see it. But the BIL monies spread over 5 years. And so we're going to have this nice infusion of really important infrastructure dollars over the next 5 years. It's going to boost the economy. And most economists will tell you that when you have an infrastructure expenditure, you get at least a 3-time return on that investment, particularly water. You build a water system, and it pays over time tremendous returns.
Okay, so we're talking about personnel shortages, maybe a workforce challenge that's going to keep us from taking advantage of some of this funding right away, but you're working on it. I'm thinking about New Mexico competing with other states in the region for workers. That's something we've talked about again and again in other realms, you know, in private business, for instance. Is that something that the state has found a way to address?
Well, absolutely. It's better than just the mosh pit of competition, everybody vying for the same resources. Give you some examples, and I mentioned Taos earlier. You know, they are very aggressively working on different projects in northern New Mexico on electrification and renewables. They time their projects in such a fashion so that when one project ends, the other is starting in another county immediately, and that way those workers up in the north don't migrate up to Colorado for it. And so it's a question of being as smart as possible in how you time these projects. The ideal is to dig once. So if you're doing a road that has also water implications, broadband implications, you do it in a way that is as disruptive, as least disruptive as possible, but also keeps that workforce in place working. And that's about as good as one can do with this. Will it be perfect? No. This is an imperfect system. But I've got real confidence that New Mexico is going to, depending on how you define win, we're going to win big. A lot of people are going to work. We're going to have infrastructure that is going to benefit for generations to come.
Okay, I see we have a caller on the line. It's Bill from Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill. Nice to hear from you today. What's up?
Good morning, everyone. What I'm seeing is a discrimination on the senior citizens based on the renewable energies. I've been trying to apply for solar panels to put in my house. I'm in 70s years old, and they tell me that a lot of them don't return my calls, and it's like a 25, 30-year contract for renewable solar panels. And the panels, I want also a plug for an electric car so I can charge my car with the solar panels. However, they're saying since I'm in my 70s and it's a 30-year contract, I won't live to be 100 to finish paying the contract. So that's a discrimination against senior citizens, and it's a very difficult situation when you're trying to be taking care of yourself. And also, electric cars have to be lower in prices because the electric cars have less parts than the regular cars. And why are they so high if they have less parts in them?
Okay, thank you, Bill. There's a lot there already. Sorry to cut you off. Marty, I'm going to go to you with this. I'm not sure how to address this issue, but it is a real issue, I think. When solar electrification of a home, you know, is paid for over a 25 or 30-year period, and Bill's being told that, you know, no one's going to finance him because he's in his 70s already. How do we deal with something like that? Is there a BIL solution or some sort of federal funding that can help?
There may be, not on everything that Bill was talking about. I don't think we have it in our we can't offset the cost of electric vehicles, although there's that federal tax credit, which would help some, but everything's expensive right now. But the work on solar would be with PNM. I would invite Bill to call us at 257-8188. It's area code 505-257-8188. Perhaps you can put this out for listeners down the road. And we'd be happy to look at that, to talk to PNM. There is money at the New Mexico Mortgage Finance Authority to help with resilience and efficiency in homes, and that might be another resource there. Yeah, at the end of the day, all of this comes down to us as individuals, correct? I mean, that's how we experience government, and so we want to make sure that as we deploy these dollars, that they're done in as equitable a manner as possible. And by the way, Bill, we're the same age, so I'm on your side.
All right. Terry, let's get back to that report, New Mexico Rural Infrastructure Needs in 2021. Let's just introduce it a little bit. Who were you talking to? What were you looking for?
Well, we were really looking at the charge the legislature gave us, which was to look at how we fully fund infrastructure by 2030 in the areas of broadband, electric, water, and wastewater, and in our rural communities. So we really went about talking to rural communities, talking to the government side of things, comparing what we do with other states to understand what it would take funding-wise to get us to where we need to go.
All right. Here's kind of a big question, but why have we fallen behind in infrastructure investment? There's, you know, obviously political will to keep the roads in good shape. What about all the rest of the stuff, though?
Well, you know, there's a whole wide variety of reasons for that. I mean, New Mexico is one of the largest states geographically in the union, so infrastructure in general is always going to be tough. Deploying water lines and broadband lines to people in remote areas, that's a difficult task. Mm-hmm. But also, I think New Mexico, unfortunately, is still trying to address its infrastructure issues with the approaches they came up with in the 1970s and 1980s. And that really needs to be modernized. And we have to think of a more expedited way to get projects done. Far more coordination, far more interest in renovating our approaches. So, you know, when you talk to people in the legislature about the need to change up how we do things, you kind of get a bit of an eye roll, and they say, well, that could take a couple decades. And we really don't have a couple decades. It's a competition nationally to get infrastructure in place because it's so important to drive your economy and drive development in your state. So we have to get in, I think, posture ourselves to be more aggressive in the next 5 to 10 years in deploying infrastructure as quickly as possible.
Now, I'm wondering if you've found if there are regional variations, like differences in needs for infrastructure in eastern New Mexico versus western New Mexico. That's
yeah, absolutely. I mean, New Mexico has had, there's not a consistent approach to infrastructure in every community. And, you know, on the east side of our state, a lot of water systems are private water systems. On the western side of the state, you might have more community-owned systems. You have broadband in the northern areas that has to respond to being in a mountainous area, whereas if you have a flatter area like in the southeast part of the state, there's less challenges in deploying infrastructure lines. So you do have those variations and traditions around how they fund things. So you'll see some communities that are really reliant on grant funding from the federal government and others that try to do it locally through their bonding programs or something. There are a wide variety of approaches.
Okay, now that we're kind of starting to touch on different community needs, I think it might be a great time to introduce another guest. We have Democratic State Representative Derek Lente, who grew up at Sandia Pueblo. He's been in office since 2017 and follows water issues closely, among others. Thanks for coming on the show this morning, Representative Lente.
Thank you for the invitation. Good morning.
Yeah. Now, we've spent much of the morning talking about infrastructure needs in New Mexico generally, but I wonder how those needs differ with our many Native communities around the state. There are several different tribes within your district even. Tell us what kinds of infrastructure priorities you see in your district.
I represent the 65th district in the legislature, and for the most part, amongst those seven Pueblos, five Navajo Nation chapters, and the Hickory Apache Nation, the needs are about the same when you talk about water, potable water, electricity, sewer, infrastructure for housing, broadband communication, roads. I mean, the list can go on and on. But for the most part, those basic of needs are extremely inaccessible at this point. And COVID taught us a lot about the thing that we did not have established, and it was a hard lesson to learn.
Okay, well, Terry, I guess I just want to know, do the variations in geography and all those different community needs and, you know, different water suppliers and co-ops, for instance, there's a lot of entities involved. Does it leave us in a position of being behind the ball because we don't seem to have kind of an overarching plan in place?
Well, yeah, I think that's one consistent theme is we really need to have a more coordinated approach. We need to have more thorough planning and prioritization of projects. So if you have a particular tribal area that is in really desperate need of a wastewater project, there has to be an effort by statewide to put that at the top of the list. And all of us work together to coordinate funding approaches around it. So we just don't, I think unfortunately, over the last couple decades, we've gotten more into this every community for themselves approach, which does not work on infrastructure. You really have to have coordination across, you know, federal, state, and local agencies and communities to consciously get this stuff done. If you're just doing it project by project, it's more of a piecemeal approach that really doesn't get you where you need to go in the amount of time we have.
Okay, I want to pause for just a moment. We are going to come right back to this topic, though. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Stay right there. We'll be back in just a minute.
On the next alternative radio, hear Noam Chomsky on Chronicles of Dissent. That's alternative radio, Saturday evenings at 6. Right here on 89.9 FM KUNM, KUNM.org, Albuquerque.
Whether you like the hit 70s musical Grease or not, you might like a new indigenous takeoff called Bear Grease. It originated with a Canadian hip-hop duo and became a big draw in Calgary. U.S. audiences are getting a chance to see the production, and we'll hear more about it on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're talking about spending federal dollars on New Mexico's infrastructure needs. Call us at 505-277-5866 to share your thoughts. Right now, we have Marty Chavez, Terry Brenner, and Derek Lente on the show with us. And Terry, I want to get back to this idea of kind of having a structure in place and a bigger plan to kind of guide the state's needs down to community levels. Who should be doing that kind of planning?
Well, I think it's really incumbent on the state to do it as best they can with the agencies that they have that are involved in these issues. And I think they can play a large leadership role in helping with that and include, of course, the feds, the New Mexico Municipal League, the Association of Counties, other electric co-ops, telephone co-ops, water co-ops. They should all be working together on an approach. So you do have planning that goes on. The highway department, for instance, does a really good job of consistently updating their plans. We need to do the same on water and broadband and other areas of infrastructure.
Now, is this sort of a planning structure something that needs to be created by legislation? I guess I'll go to Marty first on this. Is this something that you can help encourage on the state level?
Well, absolutely. And I do want to back up for 1 second. I want to hats off to the president and our federal delegation. Infrastructure spending in the United States has been an issue for decades. It has failed for decades, and we finally got something substantive done. So we should recognize that good work. Our entire delegation, except for the congressman from down south, voted yes on these monies, and this is a good thing. But it does highlight one of the challenges. Terry put his finger on it directly. That's how we coordinate the spending. Three basic sources of spending. You got all this new federal money coming in. You also have congressional earmarks that have come back, and I'm happy for that. And then you have the traditional capital outlay process at the legislature. And we've got about $450 million new monies coming in from oil and gas revenues, income tax revenues, into this next session. And it just cries out for coordination. You know, I'm really delighted that Derek Lente is on this call because he's one of the brightest members of this legislature. And it's going to have to originate between the governor and the legislature to define a process that isn't just project by project. it's important somebody can go to the legislature and come back as an elected official and say, hey, I got a pocket park for the district or got a new roof on the gymnasium. But that that's incremental, and we have the opportunity with all this money, if we design a system that works well or even works at all, to do big things and to really move New Mexico forward in a way that, that benefits all New Mexicans as opposed to individuals, depending on how powerful your particular legislator may be within that, capital outlay process.
Okay. Now, we've learned this morning that there are a couple different pots of money, in particular in the BIL, that first had 60-ish percent portion that was kind of divided by a formula, and then all the rest that's available to entities via grants. I'm wondering, Marty, is the state working in concert with the smaller entities on some kind of master plan? Is everyone doing what they think is best with their funds? I guess I'm just looking for how's the state involved in kind of guiding things?
Sure. It's not so much master plan as is extensive networking with all the different communities. And Terry laid out some of the stakeholders in that process. But you know, we find that, for example, with the grant applications, which is 40% of the BIL, we don't know exactly how much money that will be because until you get the grant, you don't have the money and you can't count that money. But smaller communities don't have the same capacity as the larger communities. Albuquerque is well situated. University of New Mexico, well situated. Farmington, they got everything they need, the large counties. But you get to rural New Mexico, and they just don't have that capacity to put in these grant applications. And so we work with the COGS around the state to help build their capacity. We've added capacity at the Department of Finance Administration at the state. Grant writers specifically, Municipal League, in conjunction with us, has added staff to do that. And we're networking, of course, at the University of New Mexico in that regard. So it's a process. It's not a master plan, but it is a process of engagement to give people the resources they need. It will be perfect. It will not be perfect. But we've already seen some failures in local governments in trying to put in a grant application and not be able to access the data, the equity analyses that are so important in this new legislation. But we're also finding successes, and you'll start to see that in successful grant applications over the next 6 to 12 months.
Okay, let's go to Derek Lente. I'm wondering, do the communities in your district have experienced grant writers available to help go after that money that's still available?
Thank you for the question. And the answer to that would be no, or many do not. And I do believe that Mayor Chavez hit the nail on the head when he talks about the capacity within each of these rural communities or tribal communities to be able to respond to these applications. And many just don't have that capacity. And so when you talk about these rural communities and the tribal communities to which I represent many of them, you know, when they've been starved for so long, decades long, and then all of a sudden they're spoon fed and they choke on their first bite of food, you know, we have to be able to help them and hold their hand along the process. And that goes to Terry's point that it's been a long process of every community for themselves. And if we continue with that, we're going to find ourselves in the same boat that we're in today. And so if we can create that capacity and hold their hand and make sure that they are all successful, I think we will find great success. And I'm thankful for this creation of this process, because I think that's what's going to see our success in New Mexico respond to these really huge issues of infrastructure inequities.
Okay, Terry, we're starting to talk about capacity and just what sort of help is out there to help build capacity. I saw similar findings in your report, and I wonder what kind of solutions you might offer for this kind of lack of a workforce in this particular area. How do we get people who can help us get that money?
Well, we really need a multi-pronged approach on that front. I think the state of New Mexico can think about having in-house engineers that they lend to projects where they don't have capacity locally, having a pool of funds for grant writing so they can hire grant writers if they need it, or a pool of what we call match funding for matching monies for grants, but also developing and encouraging nonprofit service providers that are in some of these areas regionally or locally that do grant writing or do compliance or engineering or things like that that can assist with these projects. I work with a lot of communities that would love a broadband project, but they simply can't find a consultant that could tell them if they could do it or not. So it's really kind of almost a economic development effort, job creation effort, to develop statewide just a better technical services array of folks that can help out.
And I'd want to make sure we get some listener voices in, too. We have an email from Peter, who's an IT professional with employees all over the state. He says, having them work from home showed how terrible connectivity is, even in cities, and it's expensive. New Mexico needs to build a common internet infrastructure that can be supported by local providers at a reasonable cost, or maybe by municipalities. That's an interesting idea. We also have a caller on the line, Ona from Albuquerque. Thanks for joining us this morning. Go ahead, Ona.
Good morning. Yeah, I wanted to talk about one common approach that is about to be launched, and that is community solar. There was a caller earlier that talked about the difficulty of accessing solar that is rooftop. With community solar, we're going to have 200 megawatts to start, 40 projects across our state, and anyone who is in one of the investor-owned utilities footprints, that's PNM, SPS, and El Paso Electric, will have access to this at no upfront costs. It will reduce their bills, and they'll be part of the climate solution that's all at once.
Okay, well, we know that there's a lot of interest in solar power right now. We've talked about it already some this morning, and in Taos in particular, and also with Bill down in Los Lunas, who wants solar on his home. I guess I want to ask Representative Lente, what sort of solar projects are there in your district, and is there any federal funding available to help with it?
There are some projects that are taking place right now on the Navajo Nation to help those most remote in those chapter houses and communities there. There's also a very large project now on the Hickory Apache Nation that is now going to be supplying the city of Albuquerque with some power as well. So there are some large projects that are taking place, and happy to see our tribal nations taking the lead on these very important solar projects. And I think this is the way of the future.
All right. Let's go back to Terry now. I'm wondering, you know, we've seen one of the findings in your report that was there's a lack of data when it comes to record keeping and all kinds of things that neighboring states have, and it leaves us disadvantaged. Can you help us understand how what that data is, what's missing, and how it might help when it comes to grant writing and getting more funds flowing into the state?
Sure. I think there's two aspects to this. I mean, one, having better data helps you direct funding to where it needs to go. We don't have really good household by household data on electric services, on broadband services, on even water and wastewater services to know really where the gaps are. So when we talk about, you know, getting the funding to where it needs to go, you want it to go to the people that don't have services and need access. So, but having county level data or even census level data is not really as good as it can get. We see other states like Georgia and others that just really drill down on the data, and it gives them a better perspective on where the infrastructure needs to go. The second part of the data thing is when you have something like the BIL, the infrastructure law, and a lot of priority is given towards communities that are high need, you want to be able to express that need and say, you know, in this particular county in New Mexico, we have 400 families in these locations that lack this service and they're low income. That will give you a better points or whatever you want to call it, more competitiveness when competing against other states for funding. So we want that more granular data because it gives us a stronger case to make nationally for funding.
Okay, and it sounds like this is hitting on that issue of equity that we've heard about several times through the hour. Representative Lente, we've talked some this morning about equity when it comes to getting funding dispersed, and I wonder if as a Native American and a representative for a district that's home to many Native peoples, if you have a different idea than what we've heard so far when it comes to applying equity to dispersing funds.
You know, when I think of equity within our communities, when the communities lead, and the leaders will follow in regards to responding to their needs. And so I think the processes that will be set up in the near future in regards to how all this money will be dispersed will have to be step one to make sure that everyone has a seat at the table, that everybody has, regardless of their capacity with grant writers or with their ability to spend the money quickly, that we all have a fair shake at these dollars that will change the lives forever for these very remote communities or these tribal communities. And so when you speak about equity, I'm not here trying to say that rural communities or tribal communities are trying to win the Olympics of oppression. What I'm trying to say is that we have to change the dynamic and the priorities of how we're able to bring all the people to the table so that they all have a fair ability to have access to these dollars, which will then, like I said before, change how they are able to function within their own communities.
Okay, Marty, I wonder if you would like to maybe respond to that or add. I just want to make sure that we hit on this. How are all these folks out there in the state going to kind of work together to go after that additional money? Where is the help?
Well, I would simply echo what the representative has said and what Terry said in that regard. It is a challenge. I'll give you an example, and we'll get it fixed for the next cycle, next year. But in McKinley County, the county maintains all the bridges, and particularly in this case, bridges that are on Navajo land. And it's a when we went for the grant application to put everything together, we didn't have the data. They could not generate the data. They couldn't do, and I'm talking about bridges that were brought over from Vietnam, so they're old. They need to be replaced. You've got school buses that will come up to that bridge, stop, the kids get out, walk across, then the bridge, then the bus goes across, picks them back up. I mean, that's how dire the need is. But when you come to a grant application, and Terry knows this very well, What are the traffic counts on each one? And then when you go into an equity analysis, which is more than just words, it's substantive data sets. They just couldn't put it together for this time. Now, we will go back again in the next cycle next year for that money. But it is a real challenge, and it goes directly to equity. We talked earlier about EV chargers, electric vehicle chargers. If you look at the deployment right now in New Mexico, it's incredibly inequitable. No chargers in southeast heights of Albuquerque, no chargers in the South Valley of Albuquerque. Go west of the interstate to the Arizona line, and it's really hard to find EV chargers. That is not equitable. That is not fair. And so we aim, the governor has been very explicit, very direct. She aims to fix that.
Okay, both you, Marty Chavez, and Derek Lente said that the communities can really lead on this. And I guess I want to ask Terry, since you're here in front of me, what's the opportunity there for listeners to get involved to help build their own communities?
Well, I think there's great opportunity, and communities often underestimate the power that they have to change our approaches to infrastructure. It's important to participate in those community meetings, to talk to your county commission, your city council, and express to them what it is that you need, and be as specific as possible, and give them a project to work on. And so I think influencing the process is important. You see this with EV chargers. You run into people who say, you know, I'm advocating for a charger in my neighborhood. And I think that's a great approach, and it really humanizes the issue so that our elected officials know that they have something to aim for.
Okay, with that, the music is coming up in the background. That means we've reached the end of the hour. Thanks to everyone who called in or tweeted to us, and a big thank you to our guests, Heidi Acribo-Redeker, Marty Chavez, Terry Brunner, and Representative Derek Lente. KUNM will keep following state spending on infrastructure and everything that keeps our government running. Please keep sharing your thoughts with us on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM. On Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or email us, letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, we'll have audio up on our website soon. You can also subscribe to the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our engineer this morning is Marino Spencer. Bryce Dix handled the phones today. Robert Maldonado live tweeted for us, and Megan Kamrick produced the show. And finally, a big thank you to the Thornburg Foundation for its ongoing support of Your New Mexico Government, a project shining the light on good and open governments. Follow the hashtag YNMG for more. I'm Kaveh Movahed for...